This is Eastman's Elevated Podcast. I have on great guests that are really knowledgeable, consistently successful. We're able to dive deep down the rabbit holes of these different subject matters of shooting, of physical fitness, of mental toughness and drive. All the different skills that make up a complete hunter that you can become.
Here's your host, Brian Barney.
Yo, how's it going, guys? Got a brand new Eastman's Elevated for you. So this week on the podcast, I have on Jackson Reed from Eberly Stock. So this was done at the expo. It was a live recording. Jackson Reed, he's a young guy that works for Eberly Stock, and he's just a go-getter. He's getting after elk and mule deer and tells some great stories and gives some really good insight on the podcast. So I really enjoyed the conversation. I know you guys will enjoy the episode. We'll get right into it. Just want to thank a couple sponsors. So I want to thank Eberly Stock Packs. I've been using Eberly Stock for the last few years, and they have a pack that fits every different preference for me. So I really like their kite pack as a day pack. I can also take loads of meat out on it. And it just compresses really good and hunts really good on my back, like when I'm chasing elk, when I don't want to have to drop my pack. I use the Destroyer pack. Use that for expedition style packs. I really like the way the weight sits in it. They just build durable packs that hold up to the abuse I give them. I use their little big top as my small, like, 3-day trip. Lately, I've been using their Kite 4800. I really like that for expedition style trips or mid range trips, but just a different pack to fit every different preference. They're going to be durable and hold up to the abuse and pack the weight right. So, and they offer a good price point as well. So, yeah, if you're looking for a new pack, make sure to check these guys out over at Eberly Stock. I also want to thank Onyx. Onyx is quite possibly my favorite app on the iPhone. I spend so much time scouting and researching. I have the membership for all 50 states so I can look over everywhere. It now covers Canada as well. I use it to scout and to hunt. There's so many great features, and they're always coming up with new ones for this app. I love the aerial imagery, or you can get topography or in hybrid off of both. And yeah, it just really helps me out. You know, while I'm scouting, I can make marks on my computer that then show up on my phone. And then I can also scout in real time. I can catch my maps, which just means save my maps if I don't have cell phone coverage. So it's a common practice before I go on any of these hunts that I'm saving all my maps to my phone so I have them. The GPS works whether you have reception or not. It's just a fantastic app. I know you guys have heard of it and used it. And if you haven't, go check them out over at Onyx. I also want to thank Element. So Element is L-M-N-T. Element is a hydration supplement. So you can use this during tough workouts, tough hunts, and it's just going to replace all the salt, everything that you need to keep your body rolling. Like water is not enough, and I've seen guys, including myself, bonk on just water. So it's a hydration supplement that's going to help you hydrate better. It's going to help with cramps. It's going to help with cognitive function. It's got a great taste. It's got zero sugar, so you're not adding anything bad into your body. It's just an absolute game changer for me, for training, for hunting, and everything that I like to do. So make sure to go check them out. So you can get a free sample pack with your order if you put in element/elevated. And that'll get you to that page, and then you can get a free sample pack and try them out. So, yeah, great flavors, great product. Really happy with these guys. So, yeah, go check them out over at Element. And also want to thank Black Ovis. So Black Ovis is an internet retail shop that has absolutely everything you need for your next hunt. You can save 10% by putting in the promo code EXTRA10 at checkout. So that's huge. Any new hunting gear you need, anything you need, dehydrated meals or freeze-dried meals, they have like all the top name brands as well as their own name brand. And like I say, you can save 10% by putting in the code EXTRA10. You can also try the code ELEVATED10, which will which saves you 10% as well. So check those things out and support those guys over at Black Ovis. And with that, check out everything we're doing over at Eastman's. You can check out my other podcast with Dan Picar, Eastman's Bow Hunting Journal, Life of a Bow Hunter. You can check out the magazines, Eastman's Bow Hunting Journal, Eastman's Hunting Journal. In fact, I've got to write some article ideas here for the next issue as soon as I finish up with this podcast. You can check out our videos at Eastman's Hunting TV, Beyond the Grid. I've probably got like maybe 5 or 6 videos up there of hunts, and then Dan Picar has a bunch as well. Check those things out. So some good bow hunting content there. And we've also got a promo code, that Mule Deer course is Brian MDC. That'll save you 10%. It's like $90. It'll teach you so much, like everything I've learned about traveling and hunting mule deer. So you can check that thing out. Also, our tag hub for app season right now, learning these different states and different opportunities out there. So yeah, check out everything we do over at Eastman's, and thanks to those guys for their support of the podcast. And with that, let's get into this one. So it's Jackson Reed from Eberly Stock. I'm your host, Brian Barney. Eastman's Elevated, here we go.
All right.
Here we go.
Well, Jackson, you're the guinea pig for the expo show here, so you got the Thursday morning slot. It's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you too, Brian. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Yeah, it's raining out there right now, so I was gonna be the trailer guy running back and forth getting some product, but so I get to skip out on the downpour. So
saved you.
I'm inside the trailer. I'm staying dry. I'm doing well.
Yeah, good for you. The trailer's a good setup, right?
Yeah. Oh, be able to sit down. Awesome. Yeah, it's like the team lodge, I guess.
Yeah, they do a great job. Yeah, yep. The guys used it this fall for hunting, and they just got some great use out of this thing, and it would be nice to base camp out of.
Yeah, there's nothing better than an enclosed. I mean, it's a lot easier, a lot nicer, a lot more simple. You can beat it up, not feel too bad. It's like rather than having a camper, you know. So yeah, I've got an enclosed trailer at home. I don't have it decked out, but sometimes we'll throw the cots down in there, bring a propane heater, and so yeah, just a simpler version of this. But
it's so easy, right? It's like to be able to, like I love a hunting camp, right? And I love being able to spend time with family and friends, but I hate the setup and the pickup at the end and just the whole production. Yep. And then once you set up a camp, you're just not mobile anymore. So if there's no deer or elk there, it's like, where do I go from here, you know?
100%. Yeah, yeah. 100%. Yeah, I hate that. Yeah, I hate immobilizing myself, you know, and taking that asset away. So having the enclosed, especially, you know, you can put stuff in here, machines or whatever you might need for the hunt. So,
I run a canopy on my truck a lot where I just have my coolers and my gear kind of set to one side. And then I have a bedroll right there on the other side, and I can just crawl in that thing anywhere. And I never get any hotels. I can sleep anywhere in that truck. And then it's just like, I just jump in the cab and I'm good to go, and I can move my camp and kind of sleep wherever I end up. And it just works really good for my style of hunting.
Yep, for sure. 100%. Yep. Yeah. I don't like being stuck in one spot. So I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you.
Yep. For sure. So you're with Eberly Stock. How long have you been with Eberly Stock?
Yeah, I've worked, it'll be 5 years this fall. So I'm the customer service manager there, and I've been doing customer service the whole time. Believe it or not, when I started, there was, I think, 7 employees total. And at the time, they mainly just needed a customer service, a guy. Like, they were all kind of just handling it, amongst the team. And when the emails would get a little hectic, you know, they'd all jump in there. So it was all just like a group effort, and they just needed that customer service guy. So back when I joined the team, that was my role, and I was the only customer service guy. So now I'm the customer service manager. We've got between the returns guys as well. I mean, we've got like 3 or 4 guys on the customer service team, but it's a great group of guys. I mean, love what I do. Some people, you know, they hear the words customer service and they think, oh, it's just a bunch of people complaining and, you know, you're fixing people's problems. Of course, there's a little bit of that, but if you work for a company and you're doing something you enjoy, then all the people you're talking to are like-minded people, and so it's it really makes the job fun and enjoyable. So
I love it.
And
you're talking, you know, most people in the hunting industry are like-minded individuals, and most of them are good people as
good
well.
People,
and
yep.
So, you know, they may have something that went wrong or they may have something that they need to talk to customer service, but most of them are going to be pretty understanding.
Yeah,
of an outdoor brand and be able to work with you to solve the problem. And I bet you make a lot of people's days as well, able to work through those issues.
That's a huge part of it for me is like, I love helping people out. I hate calling myself like a people pleaser, but I definitely have, you know, it makes me happy to know that I've made someone else happy. So fixing people's problems and getting them back out in the field, you know, like middle of hunting season, someone's all bummed because they, you know, bent their frame or whatever. And hey, we'll get you out a new frame and you'll be back at it, you know, this weekend. So it's cool. You know, I love being a part of that, that portion of the team. And then, just recently, I've been doing a little, like I said, the team's been so small. Now we have, right around 30 guys on the team. I mean, we've really grown. All departments are doing really well. And I've recently been helping a little bit out with the design team, doing some research and development stuff. So that's been really fun.
How cool.
Yeah. So, you know, like the customers, it kind of correlates, you know, you hear stuff, you hear feedback from the customers, and then you can apply that to, you know, new products or current products, and then also just getting out in field testing and so,
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can't believe you've been there 5 years and we haven't ran into each other, but time just flies by, you know.
Time flies, everyone's busy. We're all, you know, doing a million things at once.
Well, you guys, it's such a good crew of guys too, where you guys all love the outdoors. Yeah. You guys all love hunting, and so there's a lot of R&D that happens over there, which is a good thing. So what's your favorite go-to pack right now?
What I run right now pretty much on any hunting trip is just the mainframe, the F1 mainframe. And
the Vapor Series bags on them?
I would say right now my favorite's just the 5,000. You know, we've got the 2,500 Vapor Series. We've got the two bat wings. Those are kind of really good day setups. But I'll use the 5,000 just for a day setup because it's not really much heavier. You can compress it down just the same as the other setups. And if you do need the extra room, it's there. Like, you know, I overpack a little bit. I always kind of pack on the side of safety. And so, like in the winter, I always have lots of layers, you know, a parka in there, whatever. So I don't like to worry about the space. So, the 5,000 Vapor. And we've got lids now, too. So a full lid setup really, really kind of complements the whole thing. You know, you can put a head on there and really just, you know, customize the way you like. So we've got tons of more, tons more accessories and other frames even coming out for 2024. So
that's exciting.
We got some exciting stuff coming. I might be running a new pack come next fall.
We'll see. Cool. Some prototypes,
Okay,
you'll have to let me in on those.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I like that mainframe. I do like the 5,000 bag. The 7,500 is such a giant bag.
It's a lot to control.
Yeah, you almost don't. Yeah, it is a lot to control. Yeah. So I do like that 5,000 size. And then I've been using that, was it the Kite 4,800 of your guys? Is the internal frame.
Yeah.
I like that one. The Kite Day Pack is like really good for me too.
Well,
just because it's so light and I can hunt with it on my back. And I like that one as well.
Yeah, and you can still throw meat in there. Got the Gossamer frame sheet. So you can, And I know you hunt, is it a destroyer or a battleship?
Yeah,
that you used to do a lot of your like high country mule deer hunts.
I still,
with, still
like
do.
It. Yeah, yeah, it's the destroyer.
The destroyer.
Yeah, the destroyer's a hair lighter, hair smaller,
just,
whatever.
But
I really like the way that packs the weight. Just it holds it. The way it's designed is that you put all your gear in it and it sits vertical, so it doesn't stick so far off my back, and so it packs the weight really well for me for like an expedition style trip. So I really like that pack.
I know we love seeing you with that because there's not a it's definitely a mission tactical military, you know, pack, but it's really fun to see someone like yourself especially out there using it as a hunting pack, you know, full-blown backcountry backpack style hunting pack. So
It's worked really well for me. It's packed quite a few deer and some elk out for me, so it's done right by me.
That's awesome. But you were talking about prototype for next fall. The frame we're actually coming out with next fall is one we were prototyping this fall, so I actually took it on my elk hunt and we took it through the paces. And so we actually my buddy and I we did swap it just to kind of test it out, but yeah, I actually broke it. So which we thought it was unbreakable at the time, mm-hmm. but I broke it. So I was proud of that. And we're going to, so it'll be even stronger. So it'll be a good one.
Yeah. You got to get your gear to the people that are toughest on gear. Right.
Yeah.
Us guys that really use our gear, it's like, mine doesn't just sit in a case or in a, it doesn't sit pristine. It's like, I have it out rolling around in the dirt and the snow. And so if it can be broke, I can break it, you know? And so like, it sounds like you're similar. So a great testing guy for like those packs to make sure that they are going to go through the paces and hold up. And you guys are really good. The durability of your packs is unmatched. Like there isn't much that goes wrong. That's why it's probably nice to be the customer service, is there's not too many issues with those packs. At least they've always held up to the abuse that I give them year after year, which is amazing in itself.
Yeah, and we get a little, you know, and time to time, we've now come out with a lineup that's really lightweight and geared towards, you know, the lightweight backcountry hunter. But, I mean, we still get a little grief time to time about our stuff being heavy, right? Mm-hmm. But it's all double-stitched, you know, it's got, you know, extra liners, and it's... you know, it's not going to fall apart on you. So like you said, it's all durable, military grade, you know, stuff, you know, troops are using it overseas. So it might be a little bit heavier in spots or at times, but it'll hold up. You know, it's not going to be the bag that gives out on you when you're 10 miles back.
It's
there,
tough.
So.
I've gone too light on bags too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's all a give and take, right? Yeah. And now that you're working to design these bags a little bit more, you realize that it's a give and take with what you want out of the pack. And so if you want durability, like, it's going to be a little bit heavier.
Right.
And I got on the lightweight train like years ago when I wasn't paired or using the Eberle stock packs or whatever. And, you know, I was using like some backpacking packs like Osprey or
Kelty or something.
So using those packs, and they made some really light packs, and I started to go with them and like, gosh, this is really cool. I can get in for 3 pounds, or I can get in for 4 pounds or whatever. But then they just fall apart. And by the time I'd actually put weight in them, then they don't pack the weight very good.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, now I put 90 or 100 pounds in a deer in this pack and it doesn't hold up. Yeah. It doesn't pack the weight right. And it's such a give and take. But you guys are definitely on the durability side of things, and definitely on the side of like being able to pack heavy loads in them.
Yep.
And so I appreciate it now, and it's like, I don't need to save an extra pound or two to be uncomfortable the whole entire hunt, you know?
Right.
Like, I'd rather pack a little bit more weight and have the durability and the comfort.
100%, yeah. And it's just, you don't, you know, you never can really guess or assume what you're going to throw at your pack. You know, you get in situations and, you know, everyone assumes it's on your backs. You know, you can keep it nice, set it down on a rock. But, you know, you get to packing out an animal, or you know, it's dark and you're trying to get back, you know, you stop caring about how you're treating your stuff, right? You might throw it down, or you're yanking on a strap here and there. So yeah, it's nice to have that durability factor for sure.
Well, tough on gear again, it needs to be tough for us to use it, right?
You
go on some good adventures last year.
Had a really fun fall. I took out a Special Forces, Wounded Warrior Special Forces veteran.
Wow.
James Hamilton. He's now a friend of mine. You know, he's a great dude. He called us, he drew a really coveted tag in Idaho. He actually called an outfitter buddy of mine who used to have a permit in the zone where he was, going to go hunting. And so, Anthony, my friend, he called and said, hey, I got this guy, he's trying to go on an elk hunt, I don't guide down there any longer. And James, the guy that drew this tag, he drew it was really cool that Idaho does this, but it was a Wounded Warrior specific tag. Like, it was, you know, for a veteran that had been, you know, injured in battle. So so when he got this tag, it was before all the regular draw results and stuff were out. So he was calling around to some of these outfitters, telling them he had the tag, but they thought he was like setting them up, you know, or something. And he didn't actually have it. So they were a little shy to jump in and jump on board and say, we'll take you. So he got my number from Anthony and got a hold of myself. And, we had taken a couple folks out there the year before and shot some really nice bulls, and Anthony do that. So he said, hey, yeah, would you mind taking James and blah, blah, blah. So we got James hooked up, and he he's from Nevada, so he drove up. This was a September rifle rut hunt. So that was kind of the start of the year. He came and did that. We got some really cool footage, some good video and photos, and lots of good gear testing. And
do you have a video that came out of that hunt?
We don't have one yet. Okay. Our guy's working on it right now.
Cool.
The plan is definitely to release like a full film, I think, still. Mm-hmm. So it'll probably be out next fall.
Right.
It'll be a really cool video. James, he's a complete badass dude. You know, he's special forces. So like, he's like fully equipped to shoot as far as he needs to. And I mean, he can shoot freestanding out of helicopters. You know, he goes like stag hunting and stuff. So he's like an amazing shot. And he's a gun guy, right? He's got all his guns all fully equipped to the nine. So he came out there fully ready and prepared to, you know, take an 800-yard shot at a trophy bull. So, but the cool thing was is we called it in. It came running into 40 steps, you know, and just shot it freestanding right there. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
That was really cool.
Those guys, well, and that's a guy you can trust with long range. And long range, those rifles have amazing capabilities, but there's so much variance in those shots, you know, with raid in the wind. And then to be able to, you know, shooting a rifle, it's like easy to sit here and talk about being an accurate shot with a rifle.
Yeah.
It's a different thing when you have a big bull standing in front of you.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime tag. Yeah,
And it seems like, you know, I've seen some really good shooters on targets and things, and then they get on a big bull, and all of a sudden that crosshair finds hair, and they jerk the trigger. But that's one guy where you don't got to worry about it. It's like, you know, he's so rock solid that it's just like that bull is dead. But, you know, another difficult thing, like, to make those close shots. I know with a bow, for me, a lot of times those closer ones are more difficult. They're offhand. Things happen quick.
Yep.
And, like, you don't quite go through all the steps of execution because it is so close and it needs to be rushed and hurried.
Yeah,
so that's a difficult thing as well.
There's a whole other level of panic involved because it's right there.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Right, and, you know, you can't mess it up. Yep. It's funny you mention all that because, that is another really cool adventure that we actually went on before this September 15th hunt was my buddy, my best friend Cooper. He guides hunts up in northern Idaho, now actually central Idaho, but he drew a moose tag. You know, in Idaho, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, so that was a big deal. And he's actually kind of, you know, does some pro staff stuff. He's an ambassador for us at Everly Stock, so we were going to go up and make a video out of that. This was up in northern Idaho, and we went up there. Casey Richmond and myself, Jay Fritz, our videographer, we went up there, and we were up there for a week, and no moose died, and so we were all a little bit like, you know, Greg, you know, we got back, he's like, hey, what the heck, we can't be just sending you guys out on these trips if you're not going to come back with any content or anything, you know. So this elk hunt was then soon after, and I was already a little like, oh gosh, you know, I gotta really make this happen. We gotta get at least an elk on film and blah 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 blah. Which it's like arguably the best tag in the state. So if you really sat down and just calm down and think about it, you know that's gonna happen. But in the back of your mind, they're wild animals. There's weather involved. There's other hunters. So you're just like, I don't know. Hopefully everything goes smooth and as planned. But back to your point about James, I was just like, well, I mean, if we can just get an elk, you know, it
within
sounds
a
like,
mile,
sounds like within 1,000 yards. Like, I hate talking about shooting elk that far, but it sounds like if we can get an elk within 1,000 yards, we should be able to kill it.
Yeah.
And James, you know, considering the things he's done in his past, I don't think he's going to get too rattled when a bull comes bugling in, right? And we've been texting about that before. You know, he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, I've done enough crazy stuff with my, you know, background that not too much gets me that excited anymore, you know, or something. And then I was sitting there like, well, we'll see what happens when a big screaming bull comes running in. And he did get excited, so it was cool to see him.
But kept his cool. Those military special forces, their experience, like one of the most impressive things are just their mind, right?
Yeah.
How they're able to control their emotions execute under pressure, which takes years to learn. But to have a guy show up and go, hey, don't worry, that elk isn't shooting back. We got this, guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you put some trust and some faith into him.
Yeah.
But that moose hunt, man, Shiras moose, like, I have a joke with my buddies that moose hunting sucks. Like, it's just so random, and then their populations, they just don't have this huge density, and so running into a bull can be this random occurrence. And I actually drew my Shiras moose tag for Montana, not this past year, but the year before, so it's been 2 years, and I dedicated to do it with my bow. And same thing, like... I hired a cameraman for a week, and of course Eastman's is fitting the bill for it. I try not to put too much pressure on myself and just try to enjoy the experience. But we went a week and we didn't see a moose. Now I did save the film, and I was able to find some elk, and I had an elk tag, and we ended up arrowing a bull, so that all went fine.
Yeah.
But I had to send my cameraman home, and I hadn't found a cow or a bull, and it was a bit of the pre-rut action.
Yep.
But it ended up taking me 30 days to find a good Shiras bull and finally arrow him in a foot of snow. And there's pressure when you have one of those tags, like not just the content side or trying to capture a video. And like I say, I really try to enjoy the entire experience, no matter how we're capturing it. But there's a bit of pressure when you have a coveted tag like that, and especially like a moose tag where there's so few and far between. And I didn't want to shoot a bullwinkle. I didn't need a world record, but I wanted to find a good representation.
There's just all this. It's just...
Dude, and the frustration of it. Like, I just kept to the program, and I was using a combination of vantage points, still hunting, and also road work with my vehicle covering country. Mm-hmm. But it was funny. Like, I had a buddy show up into town, and I had been glassing this one area. I'm like, hey, I saw this 6-point bull up here where I was glassing. Go into this spot. This is the knob I saw him. Went into that spot, and then he saw a great Shiras bull. He ran into it. He got video on his phone, and he's in bow range of this shooter Shiras bull. And I'm like, oh, man. So then... he gives me the intel. Yeah. I go straight back into that spot, and I start looking for that bull for a day, for 2 days. Well, in the meantime, he starts hunting a different area looking for another bull, sees another bigger one off the road. Like, I still haven't seen a shooter bull.
Yeah.
It's like chasing a vapor trail. Like, I learned pretty quick, like, where anybody sees a bull, don't go to that area, just because the chances of running into that bull in that area again are, like, few and far between. But it really took, like, a lot of dedication and a lot of like just keep believing in the process, continue to do the right things. And, you know, is like eventually you earn your opportunity. But man, moose are tough. But I tell you, like I say, moose hunting sucks, but I'm a bit hooked on it now.
That's funny. I know it's funny you say that because before he had this Cooper, my best friend, before he had this tag, I was the same way. I was like, well, I don't really care to go moose hunting, honestly. I mean, it's, you know, we don't have that many of them in Idaho. Whatever. But now I'm kind of like, there's something fun to that. I mean, they're just so, I mean, obviously there's not very many of them, but they are elusive. I mean, it's for such a big animal to just, you know, and I don't know about where your tag was, but where we were up in northern Idaho, I mean, it was just lodgepole pines layered on top of lodgepole pines. So you couldn't see, you know, 20 yards in front of you unless you were in a meadow or some type of a trail, some type of trail. So it just, that whole part of it was, you know, interesting too. Fishing, I remember we were getting a kick out of it because Fish and Game sends you a letter and everything when you get the tag, and sort of basically telling you, basically like kind of giving you tips on like what they would do, right, for the tag. And basically Fish and Game says it in there. I could pull it up on my phone right now. I'll try to remember, but it says something like, I mean, it basically gets down to your best odds, your best bet for seeing a moose are just driving on the road. And we couldn't stop laughing about that, you know. We're like, here they are telling us our best bet is to just be road hunters, you know. So there was a little bit of that involved, obviously, because you're just driving these old logging roads and, you know, you can't, where we were, you just really couldn't glass. So it was kind of frustrating, but.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're not sure what the right move is. And I started questioning myself, too. And I've hunted Alaskan Yukon moose, did a big float for him, trying to arrow a big Alaskan Yukon moose. And I did see like 10 bulls, I think. I don't think all 10 were shooters, but quite a few good bulls that I just couldn't catch up to. But then I had that Shiras tag, and 30 days of hunting – So I started telling my, like, you almost, your inner voice is like, man, I am the worst moose hunter out here. And then you just got to believe in the process and go, yep. No, I'm a good bow hunter. I just got to keep doing the right things. Yep. I got to keep looking, keep putting my time in, you know, and eventually I'll earn an opportunity. And that's what happened. I ended up hiking up a drainage I had scouted that was like a boggy bottom drainage. And, you know, the other thing about moose that's difficult is like you have to put limitations on yourself. They're so heavy and so big, and I might be by myself trying to get it out of there. So like I put these limitations. One of the reasons why I love hunting mule deer is because I can end up 15, 20 miles back and I can always get them out.
Yep.
But a moose, I had to say, okay, 2 miles is my limit from a road.
Yeah.
And then, so I'll hunt inside that 2 miles. And of course the bull I ended up killing, I was like 3 miles right like to three, my turnaround point, you know, and then saw him and it wasn't a big deal. I got some help getting him out of there or whatever. But
you're right.
Moose,
100%.
Moose are they're a beast, man. Yeah. It's like they're a difficult animal, but now I'm kind of hooked on it.
Yeah, it is. It's just a new challenge, you know? So, there was definitely an area of that unit we were in that, you know, we had heard a lot of reports of big moose being shot, and it was a really gamey-looking area on maps and everything, and definitely a no-man's land where you really had to get in there. But back to what you're saying, I mean, the day before the season, we went down. We put a lot of miles on our boots and hiked down into this drainage, and we're scouting out. And it was like, "Jeez, like, I don't know if we shoot one down here." I mean, it's you're up in northern Idaho. It cools down, but it's still August, so it's not, you know, it's not the most ideal conditions to just leave meat out for long periods of time, or you know. So
did he end up killing a bull after you guys left?
He didn't, you know, he never did. He went back up and he went back up when it snowed, you know, trying to cut tracks and stuff later in the season. But
good idea.
But he was guiding his own hunt, so he just didn't, you know how that is when you're a guide, he just didn't have much time to put into it, unfortunately. But the good news is in Idaho is it's not a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's a once in a lifetime moose, so he will have, you know, the chance in I think 5 years to put in again for that tag, and not, he probably won't put in for the same one, but you know, hopefully. It was like the tag he put in for had like the highest odds, I think, or something, so therefore he knows. But that was a cool experience. But kind of back to your point about putting a lot of pressure on yourself, I drew a good rifle elk tag this fall myself.
Right on.
And it happened to be in an area where my friends and I grew up archery hunting, so like we knew it like the back of our hand. We know where the elk like to hang out, but it was just again that pressure of like, well, now I've got the tag, you know, and I'm going in there with our rifle, so like I've got to make it happen, you know. There's no excuses. And so, yeah, I definitely lost some sleep over that whole deal. And
it's pressure, and, isn't it?
Yeah, that pressure. When you're really into it, you know, that's where you get caught up. Like, I have plenty of friends and people I've hunted with when I love hunting with them, and they're great people and they're great friends. But, you know, there's just that extra level of, like, dedication, you know. And if you're just, like, pouring your heart and soul into it, then you do kind of get caught up in those pressure moments, I think, personally.
Yep.
Because it's just, you know, you care. You care a lot, you know, like, and it's just a pride thing, too. You know, you don't want to see yourself be unsuccessful.
Well, like, pressure is a privilege. It's, like, really nice to have the opportunity. And these tags, even these coveted good tags, there are no guarantees. Like, ultimately, I think it comes down, you know, to your skill set, like, you know, in your skill set in hunting, of being able to e-scout, being able to locate critters, being able to cover country, being able to glass really, being able to dissect a unit when you draw a tag to be able to find the best bull in there or a really good representation of a bull, the one you want to shoot in there. And so I think it's like gaining all this experience in tough units really helps out. Like when you do draw a coveted tag, and then, it's tough, man. Like, we all don't have unlimited time either. We all have full-time jobs and families for a lot of us too, that we're trying to balance in. So it can be pressure. And I imagine, I haven't drawn a sheep tag. I apply all over the United States for the last 25 years to try to draw a sheep tag. And you know, one of these years I will. I have been lucky enough to have a goat tag or a couple mm-hmm. goat opportunities mm-hmm. and then also have, you know, that moose opportunity, Alaskan Yukon. And it is some pressure, but I've almost just learned to, like, you know, enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like yeah. really the fun is in the journey.
Yeah,
it's
it
like
is.
You want to harvest an animal, you want to be successful, yep. you dream about it all year, but really it's like this experience you're going to get being yep. able to chase an animal like that with a tag in your pocket.
Yep.
That's kind of how I started to look at that moose opportunity. It's like, well, if I don't kill one, I have given it my absolute all. I've
yeah.
got the full experience of hunting Shiras moose. I passed on bulls that, you know, I know I'm not going to be happy with shooting a lesser bull. Like, I want right. to find a good representation. But you just continue to put in the work, and eventually it seems to fall into place and you get your opportunity. But I think there's just a way of looking at things. Like, when you get an opportunity, it's like, I'm going to give it my all. I'm
yeah.
going to give it as many days as I can. But I'm going to enjoy it along
yeah,
the way.
100%. And I've learned the tough way, too. Like, if you put too much pressure on the situation or yourself, obviously it takes the fun out of it, right?
Yep.
No brainer. But it will eliminate your success, too.
Yep.
I mean, you got to just get in that comfortable mindset of just going with your gut and having a really good time. Because
yep.
that's, I mean, I'm 29, I'll be 30 this spring. And from, like, so far from my experience hunting, that's finally one of the things I'm starting to kind of fall into, is just my confidence and, like, go with your gut. Like, that first plan that comes to your mind, that's the plan you should be going. Don't go with the plan that after the next 4 days you're thinking about all this stuff and, oh, what if this? Oh, I saw bulls over here last. Oh, well, you know. No. Just go out there, have a good time, go with your gut. I got to thank my wife for that one too. She sees the pressure and the angst and the loss of sleep and, you know, and throughout all of the sports and the hobbies or whatever. And so she's always that voice in the back of my head, like, go with your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Go with your gut. You know,
100%, man. It's like those hunting instincts that you have, like what you talk about, listening to your gut. It's like you have to make 100 or 1,000 decisions on
yep.
a hunt, you know, and you do have to trust your instincts. Like, man, it's like you can outthink yourself.
100%.
Or you can second guess it. Or
oh, yeah.
like sometimes I'll get in an area in my younger days and I'll get in this area and I'll start hiking in and I don't hear any bugles yet. It's still in the dark. And
or you see somebody.
Pretty soon. Yeah, I see another guy in there. And it just ruins it, where now I'm thinking about hunting somewhere else or where I'm
yes.
going to be in the afternoon instead of, like,
yep.
being in the present moment. It's like, when you choose a spot, don't always think the grass is greener. Like, give your full effort into that spot.
Yes.
Make sure there's no animals in
yep.
there before you move on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you run into a guy, you go the other direction, you adapt to the situation
yep.
which you're given. But yeah, that trusting your gut and your instincts, those instincts take years to hone, and your instincts are like a product of
yeah.
all your combined experiences
yes.
in the woods over
yeah.
those years. And so you develop those instincts and you have to trust them. It's like
mm-hmm.
anymore, when I think it's time to go for a stalk, I'm not going to second guess and think of everything that can go wrong. It's like, you know, it feels right. I'm going. I'm all in, you know,
you have to trust that. Yep.
Yeah.
You have to be. Yeah,
it's a big part of hunting. Isn't it?
It's a big yeah. part of being successful. I think
100%.
You know, there's all the other angles, but just having that confidence and going with your, I mean, and it does take a lot of failure and failing and realizing, like, why you failed, you know,
yeah.
thinking back to, or, you know, you fail and then you hear, or, you know, but, well, oh, you know, I should have been over there. I wanted to go over there. I was going to go over there and I didn't, you know, or yeah, it is a huge part. And I think it just takes time. Like, that's one of those things. When I was younger, I would just always kind of be jealous of how calm and cool and collected some of, like, my dad's buddies seemed, you know, when I'd go out hunting with them and stuff, and, you know, some of my hunting mentors and whatnot. And but now I'm starting to, I'm not trying to say I've got it figured out or mm-hmm. that I don't lack confidence in my plans at times or anything like that.
Totally.
But I mean, it's just definitely a game changer.
Yeah.
To build that confidence and realize that, you know, and understand that, the importance of just going with your gut.
Yeah, trusting yourself. And it is, it's like, it is failure. Like, experience is the best teacher, and failure is a prerequisite to success. And mm-hmm. nobody gets that cool, calm, and collect, you know, like, out of the womb or their first time hunting.
Oh, no.
It's something that you have to learn, and you have to be a student of the game. And just like you say, you're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to trust your gut at times and make a mistake and go, God, I'm such an idiot.
Yeah.
The wind was doing this. I should have known better. But I think it's like learning from that, right? Is like these failures, you like look at it and you can have a failure on a stalk and you can make an excuse like, oh, the wind just swirled, which a lot of times the wind does swirl in the mountains.
Yep.
Or you look at it as like, no, I want a higher understanding of directionals and thermals and how they move through the mountains. And, you know, I've been making notes on this wind for 10 days and I know that this buck is on the windward side or on the leeward side where I don't want to make a move. And so you kind of learn these tricks and you kind of evolve as a hunter in your decision-making process, but it's not without failure. It's not without mistakes. And I think you look at those stocks and you look at them objective and honestly with yourself, where you don't just make an excuse. You go, well, what could have I done different? Or what would have been better in this situation? It's like, okay, well, next time I'll try that. And you don't, like, you don't want to dwell on that failure. You don't want that in the back of your mind or be second guessing yourself, but you're like, okay, well, that's the wind. I need to pay more attention to this wind, and I need to know when that bull is on the leeward side of that wind that wind blows over the top, and it's like a washing machine over the top, and if he's on the top third of the mountain, I'm going to get busted 90% of the time. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I'll wait for the wind to change where I've got a good strong wind on that side, or I'll wait for that animal to go around that ridge, or I'll stalk him, you know, maybe in the evening when he comes out in his feeding feature and I've got a downhill thermal and it's pulling down the mountain. Like, you just learn these tricks, and that makes you a better overall hunter and better instincts.
Yeah, 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 you kind of just build that overall, you know, awareness of everything going around.
Yep.
And then, 100%. Yeah, I think, not getting in your head, you know, that's just, it's a huge deal. And it kind of, even with like gear too, you know, you don't want to, like, since I work for a gear company, I get caught up in it too a little bit at times and like, you know, thinking, oh, well, I should bring an extra piece of gear with me this time, or like bring this, or, oh, I wonder if I need to pack that, or, you know, it's just like, you also need to just not focus on the not important, you know, all that petty little stuff. It just, that can add side noise, and it's just, you know, so
you have to be decisive, right? In the hunting world, in your gear world, it's like, I don't know. Sometimes I get caught in that wishy-washy mindset, or that should I bring this? Should I not bring that? And ultimately, like, you just have to make decisions, and then you live with them, and they're not all right
not
all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's what you have to get okay with too.
Yeah,
but, you know, you're gonna go with your gut, and you're gonna make those decisions. You're still going to fail, but you know, at least you went all in. That's the main thing, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I think that cool, calm, and collect comes with experience as well. And I think it's important to like gain this experience along the way, like, especially me that loves to bow hunt all these critters. It's like, well, you don't just start out going for a 350 bull and that's your goal, or whatever, not to bring score, but a giant because you haven't had the experience leading up of shooting a raghorn, shooting a 6-point, keeping your cool under those moments inside bow range, not forcing an arrow, all those lessons you have to learn throughout time of bow hunting. And it takes time. And so I think it's like important to gain that experience and set these goals. And like, you know, there's so much around social media and giant animals, but the reality of the situation is like, you have to work your way up the trophy rungs of the ladder. As I really believe, you've got to kill a raghorn before you kill a 6-point.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just get lucky and you're looking for a legal bull and a big 6-point walks out and you execute. And now you did kill a 350 bull your first time out. That does happen. But I just think like, You need to seize opportunities and get that chance to range find, get that chance to draw back the limbs, execute a good arrow, kill that bull, process them, and go, okay, now I can build on that. Now I've killed a raghorn. Like, I saw some 6 points on that hunt. You know what? Next year, I think I'm good enough to go for a 6-point bull. And as you build those skill sets, your goals grow as well. And, like, you know, this hunting, it's like a lifetime of building your skills. It's like it's not instant gratification. You're not going to be as good as you want to be in a day, a week, a month, a year. Uh-huh. This is a multi-year process. Yep. And so, like, I think it's important just to grow with it and take those opportunities when you get them and then work your way up from there.
Yeah. It is. It is such a cool thing. I mean, I don't like, it is kind of it's my hobby. Like it's what I do. I mean, I grew up, playing lots of sports, you know.
What were your sports?
Basketball and football mainly. Mm-hmm. I played some football at Boise State, actually. I grew up in Boise, so
good for
that
you.
Was all really cool. But hunting has now kind of like filled that this might sound horrible, but like I literally stopped playing college football because I loved hunting so much. I mean, I wasn't playing all that much either. It's not like it wasn't like a hard decision. It was like, all right, here I am. Like, I love football, right? I love being part of the team. It was when Coach Peterson was still at Boise State. Like, I mean, what a guy to play for. So like it was really cool. He actually left, a new coach came in, whatever. But like, I just like, even in high school, like I could still go out hunting every weekend, but like I could not do that anymore, you know? And I had to just kind of hang all that up and get back to doing what I loved. And that's why I love hunting so much, is because to me that's the way my body processes like the whole, all of it. You know, it's like, it's something that you put in practice, like you get better at, like the weekends, like game time, you know. I mean, all day at work, all week, you know. If Glenn and Tanner and Greg probably don't want to hear me say this, but as much thought is going into the customer service stuff, there's equally the same amount of thought going into, what am I going to do on Saturday, what am I going to do on Sunday, what time am I waking up, where am I, you know, like, and that's game time, you know. And like, I just love that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it makes life so much fun,
doesn't
it's like
it?
Every week there's like a new big game, and every season there's a new game. So like, hunting's great. I mean,
us,
we're all so lucky.
Us guys and gals too. We just need we need something to be passionate about.
Yeah.
And
when
you find what you love, and then you find that you can work towards these goals and put this effort into it, and that, you know, there's never any ceiling to how good you can get, and you're constantly improving and learning, challenging yourself physically and mentally. And it's such a difficult challenge to go out there and try to be successful with any weapon, you know, in today's day and age, you know. It's difficult, and it takes all these skills that I admire too, all these traits that I admire as well. Yeah. And so, we're the lucky ones that have found our passion that, you know, it makes us excited about life,
we're
to
so
live
lucky,
it day
yes.
in, day out. So lucky,
I know,
man.
I look around at people, like, or like I'll go somewhere, like, God forbid, I haven't been in a long time, but like I'll be somewhere like New York City, you know, and I'll just be standing there and I'll be looking around at the people and like, this is just like, they think they're living, but this is not.
So many
living.
People
like,
are lost, aren't
you
they?
Just like, how, I mean, you wake up and you just walk down out of your apartment, get in a taxi or an Uber. You don't even have a car, you know. It's not like these people don't have money. I mean, they're all making good money doing what they're doing down there. But so it's not like, you know, you need to feel sorry for them in that sense. But it's just like, you know, so many people don't even know what it's like. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's just
overweight, obese, just no passion
another,
in life.
And, yeah, and that's another huge thing too, is like, I love hunting because like I don't necessarily go to the gym or work out on a regular basis, but hunting, but the thought of like, well, I need to stay in shape, it's gonna help me on my next hunt. It is like,
100%.
I mean, no matter how you look at it, like the better shape you're in, and if you're putting the right nutrients in your body, you're getting proper sleep, like all those health, the same with sports, right? All that stuff relays into hunting too, and it's just a healthy way to go about life, you know. If you have something you're passionate about, you're not going to get caught up in all the negatives of the non-important things, like having a bad day at work or, you know, whatever. Because hey, I'm going hunting this weekend, I don't care. Like, what, you know, I had a bad phone call. Like, okay. So it's just a healthy way to go about your life. And I mean, we're all so lucky, you know. Some people, and it does come down to luck. Like, I was born into a family that lives out west. You know, I don't know where you were born, but probably the same, right? I mean, it's we were just born into this lifestyle. Obviously, we love it, and we've really taken it in. But it is just it's just a really healthy way to go about life. And it doesn't have to be hunting, but just having that thing you're really passionate for, and keeping you on your A game and making you a better person. You know, it's just
Oh, that's it. It does.
Because it's like I want to be healthy to go hunting too, but that's going to make me. When I retire and my daughters are grown up and you know I'm able to go out and do stuff with them and be a healthy dad, you know, like an older dad or a healthy grandpa, you know what I mean? Like that, it's hard to think about now, but like that's a big thing. And so hunting is gonna keep my mindset, you know, I'm gonna always want to stay in somewhat good shape so I can go hunting, and hopefully that will, you know, relay into my later life, and I'll, you know, you don't ever see very many fat old men. They're always, so anyways, that's
100%, man. Well, and not only that, it like, just being passionate and excited about life, it makes you a better overall person, like in all facets of life. Like I think a lot of my success, like I fell in love with bow hunting and working hard at it and really poured like my passion that I had for like wrestling in high school. And then I was kind of lost after that. And I found hunting, and I was introduced to it younger, but I didn't go all in like I did after wrestling. It's like, you know, for wrestling, I would run in the mornings and practice at night, and then I had extra practice and coach. I just put everything into it. And I was able to see those results. So I started doing that in hunting, and you like learn these lessons, and it's so physically demanding, mentally challenging, taxing. You got to go through failures. You have all these lessons you learn, but really it shaped me in the person that I am. And I've been able to have success, you know, through my business, through my family, through fatherhood. I'm able to apply all these lessons that I've learned through bow hunting that make me a better person. And it keeps me excited about life and a good attitude. And my kids get to see that too, that it's like, oh, you find something you love to do and you put everything into it and you're a happy person, you know? And so like, it's just been like a blessing and a gift for me. And then I've just carried it over, and it's really shaped me into the person that I am. Like all those attributes that I really admire in people, like I've been able to build that for myself and then carry that over into business of doing what I say I'm gonna do, you know, being responsible, hard work. Like there's nobody on a crew that can outwork me. Like I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna put in my full effort day in, day out. And then also just like being responsible and taking care of things, like to go on these big hunts. Like the week leading up, I'm kind of a stress ball. Oh. Like there is so many things that I have to get done with the podcast and with construction and make sure the guys have this and clients, make sure they're taken care of. All these things that I have to handle. I've got better at it over time.
Yeah.
But you get really efficient with your time getting all those things done. Yep. So then you can get that 10 days. And that 10 days, like, to go hunt for yourself, and it's not money driven. It's something that you truly love, and it's a type 2 fun. It's not fun all the time. Like you got to be able to grind, and it's going to be difficult, and there's going to be hurdles.
Every morning when you're tired.
Yeah, it's like climbing Everest. But once you get to the top of Everest and realize all that hard work and effort has paid off, it's like the best feeling on planet Earth. You know, and it's like then that's all you can think about when you get home from a tough hunt. It's like, man, was that fun? But it also gives you perspective on your life. How you can be a better husband, more engaged, how you can be a better father, like stepping away from the hustle and bustle of life and paying bills and gas in your rig and driving here, like to get away from that and to go enjoy the woods and immerse yourself in like this predator prey experience is really special. And it like, it makes me like have perspective on the rest of my life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It just, 100%. And it just, it's a really freeing thing, you know, to be able to just go out and do something like that. And, especially, and we're so lucky in Idaho, you know, to have, I mean, if you have a hunting license, you can go elk and deer hunting every year. You know, you can go do that. We have so much, you know, so many places to go. We're just really lucky, you know. We're all so blessed, and especially, it's just cool to, like, you know, you're sitting here across from me, you found what you've surrounded yourself literally with what you love, you know, like here you are, you know, this is your job. And so that's a really cool thing to be able to do. You know, went to school and just had no idea what I wanted to do. I obviously just always loved the outdoors and stuff. And, there's certain people that go to school and they know what they're going there for a reason. Like they're going there to just study to be a doctor and that wasn't me. So to be where I am now and to just really feel like I fell into my place and same for you. Like it's a really lucky feeling, right? You know, like my parents, you know, they already lived out west and they lived in the town I grew up in, and you know, and here I am working for Everly Stock in the town I was born in, you know, and doing what I love, talking to the people that I enjoy talking to, you know. And so, yeah, all of that just makes you a better person, you know. Yep. Doing what you love for your job. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can say they do that, mm-hmm. and that's okay. But doing what you love for your job and being able to just go do what you love every day, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, how could anything go wrong?
Building a life you want to live is so important. And you're right, like, you know, it is like find what you love to do and chase it with every fiber in your being. And then hopefully you get a job at that. But it's very few people that get a job with what they love to do. But there's other ways to go about it, to live a life that you want to live. Yeah. And there's trade-offs, like, you know, in the trades, you can make good money. You can get time off, especially if you're like a really good employee or an entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's how you live the life that you want, is that you go and you work hard at these trades or whatever. You make money and then you have your time off and you're able to afford to go on the hunts that you want to go on. Yep. You're able to afford to have the time off. So, you know, there's different ways to go about it.
100%.
But the main thing is like just building a life you want to live, you know, and like work isn't fun all the time. Kind of like hunting isn't fun all the time. Like you have to put your head down and get work done. And, you know, that is like part of it. But there's a trade when you have something you love to do. It's like, I'm working hard now, but come September, I know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in the mountains chasing big bulls. And that's why I'm putting in all the work right now. You know, that's why I can put my head down every single day and I'm not getting beat down or worn out or like, you know, I still got juice in the system because I know September I'll be hunting, you know. So there's different ways to build your life like around what you love to do, and sometimes that's a better route to go than making less money and then not having the time to be able to go hunt or not having the resources to be able to go travel out of state and go do these things. And I agree with you, I think it's really important, the home state you live in, to take advantage of those opportunities. And that's where we're really fortunate out west. You live in Idaho, I live in Montana, and I'm able to travel to a lot of these western states now. But I know every year in Montana, I have my deer, elk, probably my antelope, and I have my bear tag. I know that I'm bow hunting every single year, which is huge.
Yep.
So it's like, if there's one advice I'd give, like, you know, maybe you don't get the job that you love every single day. And, you know, I'm still working towards making that my full-time job, working construction all the time. Mm-hmm. But it's like if you can move yourself to a place where there's outdoor recreation right around you and opportunities right around you, just living in that place is like gonna fuel your passion and gonna make you happy in life. Yep. So it's like those big moves are tough in life, but it's important to live like in a good area as well.
Yeah, it's just like when you hear people say, like, surround yourself with the people, with like-minded people and the right people, you know, or it's all about who you get in the elevator with, you know, if you're going up or down, you know, all that. And so it's just the same. It's just with life in general. I mean, like, the more you can 360 surround yourself with positive things and all the things you love and know and realize what those things are that make you a good person too, you know?
Well, dude, we got away from your coveted elk tag. How'd the hunt go?
That went really well. There was a lot of stress and angst and lack of sleep leading up to that.
What were the dates of the hunt?
It was October 15th. So
tough dates.
The tough date. Yeah, I mean, lately and over in our neck of the woods, it's just it seems like the seasons are. Let's see. I think they're like 2 months ahead or something. Like, we need to, the calendar is just like messed up in the world, right? Like, we're getting our Septembers in October. And so, I mean, there are, in the last few years we've had, it's been really warm, really hot in September. And so the elk have been rutting quite a bit in October and stuff. So I was like, I was pretty optimistic that, we're going to catch some rut activity. But, you know, then I had my my best friend Cooper, he was the one that came with me on the hunt. I got to give him so much credit because I could have gone out there and done it all, but I don't think I could have done it without him. Really, I mean, like, we'll get into it, but yeah, I mean, he kept telling me, "Oh, JR, they're not going to be bugling. Get that out of your head, you know, blah blah blah." And I'm like, you know, they'll still be bugling a little bit. It'll be fun, you know, carrying around a rifle while they're talking, whatever. So I was really excited, but also just really, feeling the pressure of like, gotta make it happen. I'm going, like, we were going, like I told you earlier, like, it's an area that we've archery hunted a ton, so we knew it really well. But that also brought, like, that brings another dynamic of like, well, there's all these places we could go, I guess. Like, where's the one spot we're gonna, and kind of back to what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, like, you don't want to limit yourself. You don't want to be immobile, you know. You want to be able to move. And it's a small enough unit to where, like, hey, if the elk weren't here, like, we'd go find them over here or do whatever. But we went with my gut, and we went with we set up my wall tent, like, on one side of the unit, I guess. And there's some wilderness in this unit, so there's a whole area of, like, non-roads and stuff. And so what we did was we set my wall tent up on one side of that wilderness area, and then we drove around. We had two vehicles, his and mine, and we left my truck at the wall tent, and we drove his vehicle clear around to the trailhead on the other side of the wilderness. And the plan was just, you know, we were going to bring about 3 or 4 days worth of stuff, and then, of course, if we needed to, we'd have more stuff back at the wall tent and the truck. Well, we could go into town if we needed to, but the plan was to be out there for 9 days total, and then we were going to do this kind of round trip and sort of make like a 3 or 4 day trip out of that, and see how that, you know, see how the hunt went from there. And we were going to focus our efforts on, like, what we thought was the honey hole, you know, from our experience. So we did, we put all our eggs in the basket. We set the wall tent up on the one side of the, you know, unit. And then we drove clear around, started at a trailhead the day before. And we came, we set off at like noon the day before, and we hiked down, and the plan was kind of to get our eyes on things that evening and hopefully maybe have a game plan for the morning, opening morning. But again, not trying to get too, like, set on having a plan, just trying to enjoy it, you know. And this was a true situation where I really did want to enjoy it. Like I said, it was an area we knew really well, but we'd always just archery hunted. So it's like, hey, now I get to go in here. I got a rifle. Like, I don't need to be so concerned about the execution, you know, making it happen. Like, I've been shooting, I've been practicing, like, get the crosshairs on it, make, you know, whatever. So that whole part wasn't stressing me out so much. It was just kind of everything in between. But, so we set off, we get going down, and we get to our spot for the evening glassing time for the night before the opener, and we're starting to see elk. As a matter of fact, we saw like this big herd of, I mean, gosh, 60 head probably, and like 6 or 7 bulls and a couple decent 6 points. And they're doing their whole, you know, rut deal and stuff. And so we're watching that going, oh heck yeah, well, we'll make a play on, like, we can get over there. And like I said, a couple of the bulls were pretty nice. And so we already kind of had this, like, game plan. And then Coop sees just one bull all by himself. And before we even got the glass on him, we're like, okay, that's the guy we're going for. You know, he's broken off. He's done his thing, you know, mature off, you know, trying to stay secluded, right?
Broken off from the herd, not broken off horns, right?
Yeah, broken off from the herd. Yeah,
he's, copy.
Yeah, he's a few miles away from this, you know, rut fest going on and stuff, and he's just all by himself. So we get glass on him. Okay, he's a nice bull. And so we watch him for the rest of the night, and he bedded down like during, you know, evening feeding hours. I can't remember what the moon was doing or anything, but that was just kind of like weird, you know. We're like, oh, okay, he's already bedded down, well, whatever, we'll just kind of watch him. And so we watched him till dark, and, you know, looked at the topography across the drainage from us and figure out where we wanted to camp that night and how we were going to kind of get up there in the morning. And so we had a you know, great game plan for the morning. We knew right, well, we had an idea right where the bull was going to be, you know. So we get up, you know, 4 o'clock's usually the elk wake up time for me. I just give plenty of time. So we get up there right above where we thought this bull was going to be in this general area. And we get up there. We're not seeing anything, you know, like, oh, gosh, like, where did he go? Is he going to slip out? You know, did he take off or whatever? And we're also seeing other bulls right now. So it's whatever. It's okay. Like, this guy is, we're not seeing him yet. But we're also seeing other bulls. But it's like, well, let's stick true to the plan. Like, we know this guy's here somewhere. So we sat there on that little knob, and only for about like 15 minutes. It's probably like 8:15, and then I just look over, and there he is, just all by himself, just slowly cruising across this hillside, just kind of munching down, doesn't know we're there. And yeah, it all happened so fast. There he was. That was the bull. And so I laid down and got prone and shot him, and one shot, so that was really nice. You know, it was kind of one of those high shoulder shots where he just dumped right away, and I instantly was like, ugh. I stayed right on. I kept on the scope on him, and Coop's just like, you got him, buddy. You got him. I'm like, I don't know. I think he's going to get back up. I don't know. Laid there for what felt like 5 minutes probably, but he didn't. So that was really cool. You know, one shot. It's always nice to just see him go quick. And so, yeah, but we were back in there at that point. Like, we were right in between where the wall tent was and where we parked his car. So it was like, all right, well, we got our work cut out for us now. And so, yeah, that's where Coop really came in. I mean, I mean, he spotted the bull, too. I don't know if I would have spotted him or not, maybe. But, you know, he spotted the bull for me, shot it. And then, yeah, I mean, it took us that day. We should have brought our camp with us probably that morning when we went up the hill, but we didn't know where the day would take us, so we wanted to be light, and we left our camp set up at the bottom. Well, you know, I was like 1200 feet below us, so shoot the bull, gotta go get camp, load up camp, go back to the bull. We had already taken care of him, you know, he's hanging in the shade or whatever at this point, but you know. And so then it's like, okay, now we got camp, a full bull here. So we took camp and, you know, the hind legs and I can't remember, we probably took some scraps, you know, back straps, and tried to take as much as we could, you know. But I left the head there, you know, because I'm one of those guys, like, my pride's just like, I'm not going to be the guy that takes the head out first, you know, it's just not going to be me. So left the head there, which was, you know, kind of tough, but I wasn't too worried about it, you know. We hung some clothes and stuff, kind of had him up in a tree a little bit, but anyway. So yeah, and then we spent the next 3 days freaking having to go back in there, and it was a doozy getting that guy out of there, but it all worked out. It was like one of those things where I was planning to be out there for 9 days and just really enjoy this hunt. Happened 15 minutes into opening morning, but at the same time, it was almost like that sort of felt like a win too, you know. We went in there with this game plan. We literally executed it to a T, and there was the bull. Like, it just felt like it was like too good to be true, mm-hmm. you know. So that I was bummed that the hunt ended so quickly, but it was also like an extra win in my mm-hmm. book, that like, God, we put together such a great plan, went with our gut, you know, and it came from knowing the area. Like, if we had never been to that area, maybe we'd only hunted a few times, we'd have had other ideas. But like, yeah, back to just going with your gut, and all the failures before just led up to a perfect plan that could have, I mean, not because we're like, you know, I'm not trying to say, like, it could have gone awry at mm-hmm. any point, but mm-hmm. it just happened to fall through, you know. And that's just such a sweet feeling, mm-hmm. you know, when it just goes perfectly as planned. So yeah, that was great. The elk tag was a highlight of my life for sure. It's actually the first elk tag I've drawn living in Idaho. I put in, you know, every year for a brand, you know, a bull elk tag.
Limited entry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If, you know, if we don't draw them, then we can still general over the counter hunt them with a rifle or a bow, but it's still, it was a long time coming, you know. Mm-hmm. It takes a little luck to draw those tags, you know, and so it's feels pretty good when you do. And then all of a sudden, and then all the emotions start hitting, like, well, now I've got the tag, got to make it happen, you know. So it's sweet when it all comes together.
Ah, how awesome, man. It's, yeah. Yeah, what a great adventure. And, you know, like being able to share it with one of your good buddies. And I do a mix of hunt. I do get a lot out of my solo hunting as well, and really pushes me mentally. It's difficult, but there's just something like sharing the experience with a good buddy that loves it as much as you do. And then for your buddy Cooper to like give up his vacation time, put all his effort into this hunt.
Still. He's still tagged out on a moose, and he's down there helping me on my elk tag.
That's a really good friend. You guys will remember that forever.
Oh, yeah, we'll remember that forever. And I mean, I'm kind of like you. Like I'm pretty like I go back and forth on like the solo thing or going with buddies. I mean, I would say I'm more successful doing most anything when I'm just by myself, because again, back to the side noise and the going with your gut, you get other people involved, you know, that can get in your, I mean, and maybe they're, whether they're a novice hunter or an expert hunter, you know, Cooper and I are both on the same wavelength. So it's not like, but he was like, he's, you know, everyone talks about perfect hunting partners and stuff like that too all the time. Like he's kind of the perfect hunting partner for me. You know, we work really well together. We know what we're thinking. We know what each other's, what we're thinking. But there's just a lot of times too where it's like, I'd rather maybe almost go by myself, you know, like going, like you're talking about, like going hunting by yourself, it has a totally different feel to it. And, sometimes it's a little more relaxing almost in a way.
Yep.
Like you'd think that you would be a little more like, you don't have that extra help with you, but there's just definitely something about it mentally, I guess.
Yeah. I like to do both.
Yeah.
I like both. And then, you know, you can work it out when you have a good hunting partner that really makes you better too.
Yeah.
You know, that's really in it to see, he's as much pulling for your success as his own.
Then
I love hunting, like my circle of friends that I hunt with. It's like we've got it worked out pretty good where we don't need to hold each other's hand during the entire hunt or anything. And I know that they're skilled woodsmen, that they're going to keep themselves safe. They're going to make good decisions. But then, you know, we can backpack into an area and we can split up and cover twice as much ground. And I know, you know, maybe I didn't find the elk that day and maybe he did. And now he brings me into the party for the following day.
Yes.
Or you share information. So you're able to get twice or three times as much information about an area. And then if you're able to split up, and sometimes you're hunting together. But if you can work that out and really find the right guys to share it with, it sure adds to the experience.
Yeah.
It makes it really fun. You know? So I like to do a mix and match of both for sure.
It's especially like if you have the right partner. I mean, going back to like if you make the wrong gut decision, like, you know, if you're going with your gut and maybe they're always there to maybe question it or play devil's advocate, or maybe they have a better idea. So it's awesome. I mean, Coop, another really cool adventure. Cooper shot a really nice deer above town just a couple weeks after my elk.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Super cool. Muley?
Nice muley. You had matching kickers on both sides.
Oh wow.
And it was just a cool little local spot we've got above town. That was an interesting day. It was fun to go out with he actually had an elk tag and a deer tag. I had a deer tag, but we were really trying to go out and fill his elk tag, and that was sort of like, hey man, like I'd love to go out with you and help you now, sort of a situation. But yeah, we ended up with a really nice mule deer. The bummer of the day was we didn't see any elk, partially because what I attribute it to was we saw these guys. We were actually sitting there glassing earlier that morning. Greg Williams from work, he was with us that day, and he looked up the hillside and he said, I think I see four-wheeler tracks going up that ridge. And you know, we'd hunted it enough times that I didn't even like ask him where he was looking or anything. I was like, nah, dude, there's no trails up here, like there's no roads, I was just thinking in my head, it's probably just like some really defined elk trails or something, right? I'm like, so I didn't even bother to ask him where he was looking or what he was looking at or where it was. So fast forward like an hour, we're making our way up this ridge, and we see, it was actually funny because I saw the buck first. I looked down and I'm like, oh deer. And at first Coop was like, again, back to just Coop being such a good, he's like, well, here's my gun. I didn't even bring a gun that day. He's like, here's my gun. He's like, go shoot it. And I was like, I was like, gosh, I don't know. Like, it looks like a pretty nice buck. Rewind a little bit. Cooper spotted the deer, said, there's deer down there. I pulled up my binos, said, oh, and there's a buck. But Cooper spotted the deer, of course, right? But he's still like saying, like, here, you should shoot it, man. Like, you should shoot it. I'm like, I don't know, Coop. It's a nice deer. Like, are you sure you don't want to shoot it? You know, and because you spotted him, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And so, sure enough, then we get the gun back in Coop's hand. He's going to shoot it, right? But while all this is happening, there's a UTV that we can see, like, glistening on the skyline off on a knob just behind the deer almost, like, kind of right in sight of this deer. I'm like, what the heck? That guy, he's not supposed to be there. And so the deer are already starting, like, and they're glassing, and then these guys are getting, you know, they're moving. So the UTV's like stopping and kind of keeping it going. And these deer, they can already hear it coming. So they're already kind of like looking up the hill, and we're going, oh God, we better make this happen fast. Like, Coop, you better shoot this thing or he's going to, you know, spook. And so Cooper makes a really great shot, you know, shoots the deer, one shot, dead, boom. And right then and there, that UTV kind of crests up over the skyline. And mind you, this is one of our, like, just great go-to elk spots above town. And we hadn't seen an elk all morning, like a cow, a spike, nothing. And these guys are driving their rig all up and down these trails. And so I had to go say something. So I said, hey, you guys stay right here. Like, I'm going to go down and try to talk to these guys. And, it was like the wildest thing. They didn't think that what they were doing was wrong at all. They had come from private, like out of the bottom, and they're just driving all up in National Forest ground, not even BLM. And so, that was kind of a bummer deal. We didn't see any elk, and I think that was part of the reason is those guys had been doing that for, this is toward the tail end of the season, and they'd been doing that pretty much every week. We ran into some other hunters that saw them doing the same thing, and so I got their license plate and pictures of them and everything and turned them in. Actually was trying to turn them into Boise National Forest, but they didn't really seem too eager to take any action. So I actually called the poaching hotline, Idaho Fish and Game. This is sort of a shout out to Idaho Fish and Game.
Good for you.
Right away a state trooper calls me, and about like 2 minutes after I get off the phone with the state trooper, Idaho Fish and Game officer's on the phone with me, and they just gave the dude a misdemeanor like a couple weeks ago, and this was this past fall. So as much, you know, sometimes, you know, all the fish and game departments get like grief here and there for whatever, but I gotta say that was a really cool thing that those guys, they put a lot of effort into making sure they caught those guys, and because what they were doing was really bad. Mm-hmm. And they were definitely, you know, tearing up the ground and ruining the hunting spots. And
oh, it sucks when people are just breaking the rules or making their own rules. And the almost like the trouble I run into, like I talked to Montana Fishing Game, and they're really you know, they're going out trying to find these guys that are breaking the rules because they're hurting the opportunities for all of us average guys that are following the rules. Yep. And so, but they said they just can't do it. They can write them a ticket, but they can't take their ATV. They can't take their UTV. The fine's like a couple $100. They don't take their rifle. They can't. He's like, man, we just can't punish them enough to make it to where it's not worth it for them to do it. So there does need to be some changes in the rules. Yep. But good on Idaho tracking it down, writing those guys a ticket.
And they were
talking to him. It's just horrible when they're breaking the rules like that, man. And it's so irritating for us guys that are working so hard, spending our days off, you know, hiking into these areas. But there are bad apples in everything we do in life, and you dealt with it well. But the cool thing is you were able to repay your buddy Cooper for helping you on your elk hunt to kill this giant mule deer while you guys were out. So that's pretty cool that you were able to repay him and both have success this season.
So
cool.
And he's like my hunting partner. So for both of us to be successful this fall, you know, on our own hunts like that was really cool. So it was It was a good fall.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's always good when you can get some good adventures and good adventures with buddies. So really happy for you. I got to look at a photo of that bull and buck when we get finished up here. But thanks so much for joining me on the podcast, man. It's keep killing it over there at Eberly Stock.
Yeah.
And definitely keep me in mind when those prototypes come out. Yeah. I'd love to check them out and see what you guys got coming.
Yeah, we're trying to kind of vamp now that we've got the resources, we've got a little more time. We're trying to kind of vamp up the R&D stuff.
Yep.
So you would be a great resource, you and the whole Eastman's team. So we'll definitely be probably sending them some stuff your way to put through the ringer.
Yeah,
so.
Anytime. Well, you guys are killing it.
Keep
after it. You got such a good crew of guys.
Thanks. Yeah, you guys are too.
Yeah, it's so cool to watch your guys' company grow over the years. And really enjoy using your packs and being partnered with you guys. It was really fun to get you on the podcast. It was an awesome conversation. It flew by.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Yeah, thanks for breaking the ice, making it easy on me. So that's perfect, man.
Sorry it wasn't Greg, but like I said, I was like, well, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but I know Brian likes to hunt, so I mean, that shouldn't be too big of a deal, right? We'll just talk hunting.
We'll be best friends by the end. All right. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right, guys. That's a wrap. Fun conversation with Jackson. Just had some great ones there at the expo. It's really fun to do these face-to-face and really fun to see everybody there and also see some of you guys there and meet you and hear some of your hunting stories. So thanks a bunch for stopping by and saying hi if you were one of the ones. And good to get those in. They did not give me an expo tag, which it's pretty low odds, but you do get your name in a bunch of hats. So I blanked there. I blanked Arizona Elk. Where else have I blanked here so far? Blanked quite a few places, but that's the tag draw, and I am setting up for a pretty good season, so pumped about that. Just need to get lucky here on a couple draws, so we'll see how this season kind of shapes up. But everything's going good for me. Good runs. That bow is shooting lights out. Just switched arrows. I switched to these G5 arrows, so I got those things shooting really good. Really impressed with the components of those things. And all good. Did a little family vacation, which is good. Put my time in with the family here and just planning and scheming and getting ready for next season. A little bit of fishing here and there. So I think I'm going to go with Dylan Ness here this next week, and I'll try to do a wall tent recording because we're going to set up the wall tent, fish for 3 days on one of our favorite systems, and see if we can't come up with a big one. Dylan caught a 26 the other day. Just an amazing fish. It was really fun to see him catch that thing and get him a couple good photos. So yeah, we're gonna go get after it this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that ought to be fun. So just doing that and like I say, getting those workouts in, shooting that bow, getting ready for bear season. It's like a month away, April 15th. So I'm going to get on here and try to record some solos about bear hunting, about mule deer hunting, about elk hunting, kind of revisit those subjects and things that I've learned over the last handful of seasons, as well as a lifetime of hunting these things. So we'll get those things out to you as well as some good recordings and just keep the content rolling. So thanks you guys for all the support. I really appreciate you. With that, I'll check in with you next week.